You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to another edition of the Earth Station DCU! Tonight we're going to talk Batman number 58, Nightwing number 52, Adventures of the Super Sons number 4, Justice League number 11, the Green Lantern number 1, Supergirl season 4 episode 5 Parasite Lost, Arrow season 7 episode 5 The Demon, Legends Tomorrow season 4 episode 4 Wet Hot American Bummer, Flash season 5 episode 5 All Dolled Up, Black Lightning season 2 episode 5 The Book of Blood chapter 1 Requiem, and finally Titans season 1 episode 5 Together. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, we got some sad DC news to start off with. I'm sure it's, you know, is all over the place. I'm sure everybody's heard about the passing of Stan Lee. I know Stan Lee's a Marvel guy for the most part, but he played an important part in comics in general. And DC also issued a statement on Stan Lee's death, and I'm going to read that here. Today, the world lost one of its most iconic storytellers. Stan Lee, the writer behind many of Marvel's top heroes, passed away at 95 years old. Now, millions of fans are taking time to remember Lee for all his work, and DC Comics is no exception. He changed the way we look at heroes, and the modern comics will always bear his incredible mark. His infectious enthusiasm reminded us why we all fell in love with these stories in the first place. Excelsior, Stan. I thought that was pretty good of DC to put out that statement.
I agree. I've said this to a lot of people that have come up personally, because everybody knows I'm the comic book guy in my personal life. A lot of people have asked me about how I feel about it. And of course I'm sad, but the guy lived an incredibly full life. I mean, I wish I could have the kind of impact that he had in 95 years, and all the stuff that he was able to do is unbelievable. It's really hard, I think, to understate the impact that he had on the comics industry. And even some things that you could argue were mistakes, like with Jack Kirby, benefited DC, right? You got the Fourth World stuff and the New Gods and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's a big loss for the comic community, but it's definitely a life worth celebrating.
I can remember Stan Lee fairly young, even, you know, doing intros to comic stuff and things like that from when I was younger. So he's been in my life the whole time, pretty much. So, big impact. All right, coming up next in DC News, Amazon Prime members can see Aquaman movie 5 days early. I saw that and I was like, yes, because I'm an Amazon Prime member. The Amazon Prime advanced screenings of Aquaman will be held at 7 p.m. on December 15th at participating theaters nationwide. Theater chains said to be taking part include Regal Cinemas, Cinepolis, something like that, Bowtie Cinemas, ArcLight, Showcase Cinemas, and Studio Movie Grill. I was kind of surprised by that announcement, but kind of cool. I'm going to check in to see if I can see it early.
I'm curious to see what the response to that is going to be, just in terms of the audience. Is that if that's going to be a hit or not? Because I really don't know. I have no idea how that's going to go. If it's just going to be it draws some crowd but not really notable, or if it's going to draw big crowds, I really have no idea.
I don't either. I know it's going to draw me. So I'm hoping I'm available that day. All right. And while I was going over this article, I noticed they had a list of key dates for movies coming up. Of course, Aquaman's set to release in all, you know, everywhere on December 21st. Saw that the Shazam movie is going to be coming out April 5th. Joker's release date is supposed to be October 4th, 2019. Birds of Prey release date is supposed to be February 7th, 2020. And the Wonder Woman 1984 movie is supposed to have a release date of June 5th, 2020. So that's our current DC lineup going forward for now, until they change it again, of course.
I was just about to say, I'd be very surprised if Birds of Prey actually comes out at that point. It's possible. I mean, it's not close. It is far away, but not very much has been done with it yet. So,
well, they have.
I wouldn't be surprised.
They've been doing casting, so.
Yeah, I mean, Channing Tatum's been casted as Gambit for like 4 years now.
Well, that's true.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying that it's for sure going to get delayed. I'm just saying it would not shock me if it did get delayed.
Well, if it does, it does. We've seen it before with these movies, so.
Yeah.
But that's the lineup for now. All right, moving on to other DC news. Hannah James and Kate Burton have been cast as relatives of Supergirl's Nia Nall. Hannah James will reportedly play Nia's older sister, while Kate Burton will play their mother, Isabel. We've seen a little bit of this character on the show so far, but it looks like she's going to be getting a more expanded role moving forward.
Yeah, I don't dislike the character at all, but she's not really brought anything personally for me to the show. Like, she's just kind of another character that's there.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like I said, I have no negative feelings towards the character. She's, to me, a non-factor on the show.
Yeah, well, I'm expecting further in the season they're planning on doing something with her, so. I mean, yeah. We kind of saw a little bit of it this week.
Yeah, I was just about to say, yeah, there's some stuff with Brainy they kind of are hinting at, but yeah.
Yeah. Next up for DC News, also more Supergirl news, John Cryer has been cast as Lex Luthor, which kind of surprised me.
It didn't really click at first. Like, I saw a headline that they had cast Lex Luthor, and initially I was just excited. I was like, sweet, Lex Luthor's going to be on the show. And then once I really clicked who it was actually that was playing, I was like, oh, no. What? I'm not saying he's a bad actor or anything like that, but I would never in a million years picture John Cryer as Lex Luthor, or Lex Luthor resembling anything similar to him and the characters that he generally plays.
Okay, I thought the same thing when I heard that too. I'm keeping an open mind. They usually do pretty good with their casting, so I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. But we'll see how this goes.
They've never really gone for the Lex that's usual, the more modern Lex. Which is the sort of, I mean, extremely intelligent, but also somewhat physically imposing Lex. That, like, he's so obsessed with being the perfect human that he tries to, like, work himself into. He's like an evil Batman in many ways. I don't know why they keep going. Like, we saw Jesse Eisenberg's character was controversial at best, I would say, for people's reaction to it. And I feel like they're going with the same sort of kind of nerdier Lex. I don't know. I can't see John Cryer playing Lex in any other way than a, like, I'm sure he'll be slimy, but also kind of, you know what I mean? Like, kind of just wimpy also. I can't see him playing a physically, or like his presence. I can't imagine him playing a Lex whose presence is imposing or daunting in any way.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, we'll just have to see what they do.
I mean, like I said, I don't need The Rock playing Lex Luthor. Don't get me wrong. I don't need like this jacked dude or anything, but just somebody who has a physical presence, somebody who, like, I don't know, can intimidate people in some way, and not Jesse Eisenberg or John Cryer. We'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. All right, coming up next in DC News, we got some more Elseworlds news. We got another picture of Batwoman. And we also got a comic-style poster, which looked pretty cool.
Yeah, and we also got the first two sort of mini teasers for the show. I don't know if you saw those.
Yes, I saw both of them. And, you know, I actually saw them during when I'm watching the shows, so I thought that was pretty cool. The one I like the best, it has to be the Stephen Amell one, because I mean his reactions in that short little clip was priceless. It was awesome.
They were so funny. And I'm really intrigued by that because we really didn't know how exactly they were going to approach this Elseworld. So it looks like, on some level, Flash and Oliver are aware of the body swap.
Yeah, well,
That's
it looks
interesting.
like they figure it out. It's definitely a Freaky Friday version of the shows, and that awkward kiss with Oliver and
Iris.
Iris, yeah, was just it was just weird. And she thinks it's Barry, so he must. That's the, what I did. What I wasn't sure about is she actually seeing Barry looking at him, and there it's a mind swap, or Oliver actually just Barry Allen in this. You know what I mean? I wasn't sure of that. I wasn't sure if they if the characters actually saw them as their as who they're supposed to be, or if in this world Oliver is just Barry Allen.
I would lean towards the latter. My feeling is it's the second one. I think it would be kind of confusing if you had it be the first premise. I mean, they could do it, but I think it would just be a little bit more straightforward to just have it be that the guy that we know as Oliver Queen is what Barry Allen looks like in that universe.
Yeah. And then the other clip we saw was with Barry and Diggle. Well, it was Grant Gustin and Diggle. And of course he thinks he's the Arrow. They're like sparring.
Yeah.
And he's just like confused. But Oliver, he looked like he was just in shock. Barry was more confused. Great clips, though. I'm even more excited for this Elseworlds crossover.
It's close. We're getting close.
I know, just a few weeks away. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, Black Lightning is moving to Mondays after Arrow, starting January 21st, 2019. And then the other sad part of that, DC Legends of Tomorrow is going to go on hiatus and won't return until April after Black Lightning concludes. So it's kind of a bittersweet thing. Black Lightning, I think, will work great after Arrow. Legends Tomorrow, sad to see it going on hiatus, which I'm sure it'll do what Supergirl did last year and go into June.
Yeah, and it must have worked out for Supergirl, for them to be doing it again. I also think it's the show that makes the most sense to do that. They're not going to move Arrow. They're not going to move Flash, obviously. And I think they're really trying hard to dig in on Sunday and just make that a thing. And so you can't move, in that case, you can't move Supergirl
Yeah.
because then you're sort of punting on that idea. So I think they're really trying to push that as like, oh yeah, Sunday is Supergirl. So it makes sense. To me, it makes sense that it's Legends that gets bumped.
Yeah, it does to me too. All right, and I got some mid-season announcements here. Flash will be returning Tuesday, January 15th. Supergirl will be returning Sunday, January 20th. And then Arrow and Black Lightning will be returning Monday, January 21st. So, there's your mid-season announcements. I'm not really sure exactly when the show's in for the break. I'm guessing maybe after the Elseworlds crossover, but I'm not sure. We'll keep you posted on that in the upcoming weeks.
I'm sure they'll have at least one episode after it because I would be surprised if that was their mid-season finale.
Yeah, you're right, 'cause they don't usually end with a crossover, so. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Haven't been listening to the Revcast? Here's what you're missing.
The sharks have an economy based on gold?
Apparently.
You have a shark like decked out like Mr. T with the bling all over it.
Oh, now I want to see that. I want somebody to draw a picture of a shark with a mohawk. I pity the fool.
I'm done. The Revcast by RevolutionSF.com. Available at RevolutionSF.com, iTunes, and part of the ESO Network.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
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 We got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! We got spoilers!
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 We've got spoilers!
Spoilers!
For you! For you!
Alright, let's talk Batman number 58. I gave this the old thumbs up! And even though I knew King wasn't going to kill off Alfred, I was very worried about what was going to happen to him. What is great about King's run is that I have absolutely no idea where he's going with this.
I agree. I mean, I didn't think Alfred would die, but King is one of the few writers at DC that would have the sway to be able to do that. So I was like, I don't think he's going to do it, but please don't kill Alfred.
I know.
I am really intrigued by this sort of team up between Penguin and Batman, where it's a sort of team up of necessity and survival.
Yeah, it's interesting, and we're gonna start seeing Bane's plan unfold, I'm guessing.
I agree. Batman's definitely going to become aware of the plan, which makes sense that we're kind of getting to that point. One thing I did notice in this, they've kept showing it, but they keep showing when every time they go back to Bane, what appears to be the Flashpoint Batman kind of lurking back there. And that seems to be like the ace up Bane's sleeve that he keeps holding on to. So I'm curious what's going to happen with that.
How could that be Thomas Wayne from Flashpoint?
I don't expect it to actually be Thomas Wayne, but it's his costume. And how would Bane even know what that costume is? So that's the thing. Like, I'm really curious what the story with that is going to be. That definitely, they keep teasing it. And you know something big is going to happen with that, and I'm curious what it's going to be.
Yeah, and it's not going to be revealed for a little while, so you could tell. One other thing I wanted to mention before we moved on, the meeting between Batman and Commissioner Gordon was kind of awkward, because Commissioner Gordon was clearly worried about Nightwing and how it was affecting Batman, and Batman makes it clear he does not want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That event is just going to keep pushing Batman towards the brink. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Nightwing number 52. You know, I had to give this the old thumbs down, only because if you're not interested in the story of Dick Grayson trying to reconnect with his past, this is definitely not the story for you, as Cletus had told us last time we talked about Nightwing. But, we are going to keep you guys up to date on this, on what's going on with Nightwing, because I'm hoping he gets back to normal pretty soon. But one thing I liked about this issue, Cletus, is that we didn't get the angry Dick Grayson we saw back in issue 50. This one seemed to be more, I don't know if you want to say level-headed, but I mean, he's kind of living a nomadic kind of life. And but we see him starting to see some of his Nightwing life seep into this life.
Yeah, so first off, I also gave it a thumbs down, and I'm not trying to hold a grudge against this, but this issue in particular, just putting blinders on and treating this as an issue, nothing happens in this issue. I mean, I couldn't believe when it was over, I was like, wait, really? Because I kept waiting for something of note to happen. It was a setup issue in the middle of an arc. That was surprising to me. And I agree with you. You can definitely start to see the groundwork being laid for him to kind of get back to being Dick Grayson. Actually, honestly, a little bit surprised how quickly they seem to be moving towards it. Well, I'm not opposed to it either. My biggest thing as I was reading this, though, is that I can't shake the feeling that this will either be a completely forgotten chapter of Nightwing, or more likely, it's going to be one of those things that pops up on a list from time to time of, like, top five dumbest decisions by DC, and they'll like, remember the time they made Dick Grayson Rick Grayson, homeless cab driver? That's the I can't help but feel like this story is going to get memed to death in the future.
It probably will. And in my opinion, it probably needs to be.
Well, because they're not doing anything interesting. That's the thing. Like, if you're going to do something this drastic, I mean, let's face it, this is a huge change for the character. Do something with it. And they're not really, like, basically all we're watching is Rick Grayson discover that, oh, yeah, I used to be Dick Grayson. And wow, I can do flips like an acrobat. It's like he's discovering that he's Spider-Man, but, like, way more disappointing.
I don't know why DC is doing this story. You've got the Titan show going on and people wanting to read more about Dick Grayson and Nightwing and stuff. They come, you know, pick up this comic and they'll be like, what the heck?
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they're doing this story. But it looks like they are moving Nightwing back, and that I'm okay with that, so... And, of course, the other thing that happens in the story is we see the other, his detective, Alphonse Spinza, or whatever his name is, bringing on partners to help him with his Nightwing campaign against crime, which we know is not going to go on for that long.
It's not going to get remembered. That's the thing. This is you can already tell that nothing in this story is going to have a lasting effect.
I got one thing to bring up. These other Nightwings showing up, wouldn't you think Batman would come investigate to see what the heck is going on?
Eventually. I don't think they've done anything that would draw Batman's attention yet.
Yeah, not yet, but...
I agree, yes. At a certain point, yes, I think it would. Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if it does, either, to be honest with you.
Alright, let's move on to our next title for this week. Adventures of the Super Sons, number 4. Gave this one the old thumbs up. Another fun issue of the Super Sons. We got to see Space Cabby and a lot of jokes.
Yeah, it was a thumbs up for me too. It continues to be a fun... In a lot of ways, it feels a little bit like Legends, where it's just trying to see how much fun it can possibly have within a single issue comic.
Yeah, it's great. And I did not expect the future versions of Robin and Superboy to show up there at the end. So that should be a fun adventure, I would think. And I was wondering, does that mean they've been trapped there on that planet in that house for a very long time?
I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. All right, moving on to our next title for this week, Justice League number 11. I gave this the old thumbs up. And one of the things I thought was freaking hilarious, did Jaro call Batman dad?
I think he did. That surprised me too. I was like, well, that's weird.
I thought that was freaking hilarious. And I was just like, I kind of had to do a double take on reading that panel. I was like, what?
Anytime we get more Jaro, I'm all for it.
It's pretty awesome. All right, we saw the Ocean Lord want Aquaman to kind of walk the plank into this abyss. I think it's the same abyss that Poseidon made them walk into. I don't know why they're holding such a grudge against Aquaman instead of Poseidon. You know what I mean?
Because it makes for a more interesting story.
Oh, okay. So... it was cool to see Wonder Woman come riding in on her flying sailboat to save Aquaman.
There was a whole lot of moments that were like that. It was the whole thing felt very cinematic to me. I don't know if you got that feeling.
Yeah.
As I was reading it, it felt almost like I was watching like some sort of Aquaman-focused Justice League movie, which was not a complaint in the slightest. I was like, this is good. Like, I really like what I'm reading right now.
Yeah. Now... what was up with Poseidon? But Aquaman and Wonder Woman both go to Poseidon for help. The dude just stabs him in the chest with his trident. I'm like, what the heck?
You all mean you don't do that when people come to you for help?
Usually not. Why is that? Is that something common with you, Cletus?
I guess I've been doing it wrong.
So I'm like, whose side is Poseidon on? That caught me off guard. I'm just wondering, what is Poseidon's deal?
I'll be curious to see if that's even really what's happening. I don't know. I highly doubt that Aquaman just got basically severed in half by a trident.
Yeah, I doubt it too. So
it's possible. But
yeah. All right, and then, of course, at the end of this issue, we get the Legion of Doom showing up at the Hall of Justice, where Batman and Jarro are trying to escape. So that's going to be interesting, especially since Batman's actually in a Batsuit cast.
Right.
So that ain't going to go well for him. But like you mentioned last time we talked Justice League, Batman seems to have a very important role in this, almost eclipsing Aquaman's role in this.
I have to say, Drowned Earth to me so far has not felt like an Aquaman story. He's definitely been in it. He's been a major player. But to me personally, like if you had to ask me right now who the main characters of this story are, I would say Batman and Mira.
Yeah, exactly. And Mira's been playing a major role in this. But it's still a good story.
Yeah, and it's not really a complaint. I don't care if Aquaman doesn't end up as the main character. I was just surprised based on the fact that I feel like it was pitched as an Aquaman story. But whatever.
Yeah.
It's been good. I have no complaints. It's been a good story.
Yes, it has. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, The Green Lantern number 1. Gave it the old thumbs up. Here is Grant Morrison's take on Hal Jordan in a recent interview that I read. Hal Jordan has no home, he sleeps on friends' couches, and he travels with nothing but his lantern and a rucksack. He's a cowboy trying to survive in the 21st century. I like Grant Morrison's kind of take on that. I thought it was kind of interesting.
I agree. He's very good at he is a comic historian himself. And he's one of those guys like Geoff Johns that really is able to dig into a character's history and boil it down into really like the true essence of a character. And that's, I can't disagree with his assessment of Hal. That's what I would think of when I think of Hal.
Yeah. I'm really interested in his focus on Hal Jordan, because it looks like he's really just going to focus on Hal and his relationship with the Corps and his kind of mission he's going to have here.
And what I also think is interesting is not just that he has Hal as the main character, but more importantly that focus on the Green Lanterns as a police force. And we saw that in this issue. It was very I don't know how to say it, but law focused. Like they were, you know, booking people based on certain things, and there was this protocols that they were following and all this. It was just very interesting. And I like it. I think it's also a bit refreshing after cosmic crisis after cosmic crisis with the Green Lanterns. This is something that Morrison himself has said, is that let's go back to basics a little bit and focus on just the Green Lanterns as a police force, which is normally, in theory, their day-to-day work would be.
Yeah, so I'm very interested in this take on it. The other thing I noticed about this issue, the artwork felt old school, I thought, but yet still being modern. You know what I mean?
It felt, yes, I agree. It reminded me a little bit of some Mobius comics, which I don't know honestly if William Sharp takes inspiration for him or not. He probably does, but those sort of out there futuristic sci-fi stories, it was very it felt very reminiscent of that to me, and I loved it. I thought it fits. It was the kind of artwork I expect from a space story written by Grant Morrison,
and I thought it worked really well with the Green Lantern world. So
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. With Green Lantern, you can get super weird because they're all over the whole universe. You can have all these weird things. They had those spider people that pretty clearly had Scottish accents, which I got a kick out of. For those people that don't know, Grant Morrison is Scottish. Great. This is exactly when I saw that Grant Morrison was writing a Green Lantern comic. This was what I was expecting and what I was hoping for. Just a really out there, kind of trippy, just well-written story. I mean, it was good. It was really good.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they got Hal Jordan going off on a little mission there. So I'm interested in that too.
Yeah.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
We need to tape a promo, guys.
If you had to encapsulate the Roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant trickery? Redonkulous? let's not go with Shrek. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic.
Red leader, I'm sorry. Stay on topic. I can't say it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 5, Parasite Lost. So, last episode, we see Agent Liberty put the parasite bug inside of Agent Jensen. And Agent Liberty's plan is to use Parasite as a weapon to further his campaign against aliens.
I was trying to figure out what the end goal with Parasite was. At a certain, like, I got what he was doing. At a certain point, they were talking about he was trying to create basically a super weapon against aliens. But then the way he seemed to send Parasite out at the end, I guess I was just a little surprised that he was, and that he's clearly, the Agent of Liberty is clearly frustrated at the end that Parasite got defeated. But what did he expect? It felt like he set him up for failure at the end there. I don't know about you, but it felt like he was sending him there to create... I thought he was trying to do something with Guardian. I thought he was trying to, like, basically set Parasite up for a fall intentionally in a way that had Parasite get defeated by Guardian, which would have made a ton of sense. I would have been like, okay, I totally get what you're doing there. And then it was just sort of, that's not what happened, and it didn't seem like that was actually the plan, so... I don't know. I was a little confused, I guess, by Agent of Liberty's plan.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure what he was trying to do either.
That being said, though, I really liked the episode. I forgot how much I enjoyed Parasite the last time they had him on. And it was a good villain again. I kind of wish they would use him more often.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great villain because it's hard for Kara to take him down. I mean, for a while there, Kara was on the sideline while Alex was the one that was taking down Parasite. I love seeing John and Kara working together to solve the mystery in this one.
I really like what they're doing with John this season.
Yeah.
Finally. They're really kind of getting back to, and I think it's perfect too, because right now we're three or four weeks away from the start, maybe even sooner, the start of that mini series with Martian Manhunter in the comics, focusing on him as a policeman. And that's kind of what we're getting here. We're really going back to the, like, origins of Martian Manhunter when he was a cop.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
I think it's really smart. It's a cool way to focus on the character and kind of keep him involved without having him be with the DEO.
Yes. And he's basically going to be a private detective helping aliens, because, you know, the aliens can't go to the police, really, because you don't know what you're going to get. You know what I mean? But coming to John, because he's another alien, they got somebody to fight for them.
And what I like, too, is that it's a great way for him to be in the action in the stuff that he's involved in. It makes more sense for why he's not involved in other stuff. Because it used to always frustrate me. Like, I understand they can't do a ton of Martian Manhunter CGI. Like, it frustrates me, but I get it. But it would always be kind of frustrating that they'd send Supergirl out on this mission where it obviously would help if she had Martian Manhunter there with her. And he wouldn't. And with the sort of thin excuse that he was the director of the DEO, that he had to be at Mission Control. But now, if she's out on a mission for them, it makes sense if he's not involved necessarily, and it also helps them if he is involved, then he generally will actually be doing what he's capable of doing.
All right. So we see Alex having to answer to this Colonel Haley, who obviously, you know, by the end of the episode, we could tell she was an alien hater. She did not like the fact that John was in charge of the DEO before. And I was wondering, did John have to answer to her? Or was he answering to somebody different? Do we even know?
I mean, technically, they originally were just answering to the president. The only reason Alex is answering to this woman is because the president has placed her in charge.
Oh, okay.
I kind of picked up on the hints of the last time we saw the new president. Don't you feel like he's got an anti-alien agenda that he's sort of keeping to himself?
Yes. I felt that too. That will be revealed, I think, more toward as the season goes on. That's what I feel like, anyways.
I think this show is doing a great job of building this sense of kind of, I'm not going to say hopelessness, but like, it doesn't feel like it feels like Supergirl's up against a serious problem because it's hard. Like, how do you beat hate?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what I really like is that it's the villain itself. I like the Agent of Liberty, I think, is a fantastic villain on the show. Like, I really like what they're doing with him. But also just the way that they're building up the story, I think, is really good because it's not just an obvious, like, Supergirl goes and punches the bad guy and it's over. I think we agree that if the Agent of Liberty got defeated, that wouldn't really fully solve the problem.
Yeah, it's not. All right. One other thing I want to talk about before we move on here was Brainy and Nia. Do we have a blossoming romance here?
I am like 99% sure, yes. Especially since it's the CW, like there's almost no way that's not going to have something go on there.
I thought it was funny. Nia seemed a little upset with Brainy for not calling her. Brainy gives her a stalkery rundown of her daily routine and then adds she told him not to find her, or to find her, not call her. Oh, man. He was no win, but Brainy is funny.
I have enjoyed him. I have to say, it does feel like the show occasionally... sometimes it feels like the show forgets that he's from the future, and other times, like, I don't know, they seem to be inconsistent on their portrayal with him.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Like, there are certain things that he's taken aback by, like, I can't believe that you wouldn't know that. And other things, like interactions with people, like, I buy into all of that. And then there's things where, like, he would already know that how to do that. But whatever. I'm just saying, the show, much like with a lot of things with Supergirl, they are occasionally forgetful, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 7, Episode 5, The Demon. All right, The Demon end up being Tala al Ghul. Were you surprised?
I was surprised. I want to say I was wrong, but I feel like I was close. I feel like I should get like a quarter point for that.
I was surprised because she's supposed to be dead. And, you know, now that I saw this and we know that John Barrowman's supposed to be back for something, we don't know if it's just for the Elseworlds crossover or if he's coming back later this season. If she didn't die, there's a good possibility that some of the other characters didn't die either.
Yeah.
So that kind of opens that up. But yeah, this was a great episode of Arrow, I thought.
I really enjoyed this episode, and I did like the little tease about presumably Batman, although arguably it could be Batwoman that she's talking about, reason that she was in the prison in the first place.
Yeah, my first thing I thought was Batwoman, because we knew, you know, Batman's kind of been off limits for the CW. So the first thing I thought of was Batwoman, since she's supposed to be on the show. But you might be right, it might be Batman. But I was glad to have the hint of that, because, you know, it brings Gotham more into the CW universe.
And I like it too, especially with Talia al Ghul. It was always kind of weird that there was just the whole al Ghul family seemed unconnected to Gotham in any way.
Yeah.
So, and I've been enjoying that.
Of course, we know from the comic version that Talia and Bruce hook up at some point.
Right, yeah.
So
kind of an important relationship at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was good. I have to say, the one thing that really surprised me, in addition to the reveal of Talia, was that there didn't seem to be anything deeper with the Doctor. I was really convinced. I will admit, I was very wrong. I really thought there was something else going on with him.
I know, we talked about that last week, and you know, I kind of was wondering if something else was going on with him too, but this was the end of him.
Yeah, it really just, last episode, it felt like they were setting up like him as like a mini villain in a lead in to presumably Diaz, and it just seemed to be more of just a setup for the following week, which is fine. I actually kind of liked it because it gave better stakes to the episode than if he had just been the villain for only that episode.
Yeah, that is true. And it also giving Felicity and Laurel a reason to get Oliver out of prison.
That I was not expecting. Obviously, I knew that Oliver was going to get out at some point, but I like how they kind of organically built it in. Like, it feels less cheap this way, I guess.
Yeah, it does.
We know they're going to get him out of prison. Like, we know that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm actually kind of impressed with this show because I feel like a lot of times they're kind of lazy when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of wondering, Oliver let Talia al Ghul go, and he stayed behind, obviously. That was smart of him. I was half wondering if Talia was actually going to give that flash drive to Felicity. Because she could have easily not and just got rid of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe because of this adventure, they finally put their rivalry to bed. You know what I mean?
Right.
I have to say, I think Arrow's been one of the best shows this season out of all the CW shows. I don't know about you.
Well, I totally agree. Arrow's been really good, like consistently good. I don't really feel like they've had a clunker yet.
Yeah, I don't either. Another thing that happened in this episode, we got to focus on Curtis and his trauma of Oliver going to the prison because they haven't really focused on him yet. And I thought his little short arc was really good in this story.
I was very, like, refreshingly surprised by it. I was like, wow, this is nice. I wasn't expecting Curtis to have an interesting arc because it's not happened in forever.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good, and I really liked it. It kind of brought him back into what he needs to be, you know what I mean?
I agree, because it was one of the things where it was like, oh yeah, that's right. This is the same guy that we keep reading in the Terrifics. Because he's never, like, he just doesn't really resemble the Terrific that we usually get in the comics. Just because he's often just sort of relegated to the sidelines a lot.
Yeah.
On the show. So it was kind of nice seeing this, like, being reminded of how smart he is and all of the different things he can do. That he's not, because I think a lot of times on really all of the shows, the smart people kind of get relegated just being tech people. I feel like Caitlin Snow is one of the only people that, and even her, sometimes it just ends up being like the girl on the computer. I think it was good seeing that, like, that Curtis is very intelligent, and yes, he's good with computers, but he is also intelligent in other fields as well, which is what Mr. Terrific is. Like, he's just all around genius.
Yeah, and you know, once he got past his hang-ups, he was freaking awesome taking out those guys.
Yeah.
So, I want to see more of that, Mr. Terrific.
I will say, one thing I keep forgetting is that there's that side story going on with Argus. Every time they start talking more about that, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I have no idea why I keep forgetting about it.
Because
I guess I'm so focused on the story with Oliver in prison is so good, I just keep forgetting that there's another story.
Yeah, and we didn't get any flash forwards this week either, so not that we needed it this episode, but you know, I'm still intrigued with that storyline too. Lots of stuff going. They're doing a good job with juggling their stories, keeping the focus on Oliver while having these side stories going on.
I think that's kind of smart, to be honest. They've had a couple episodes, I believe, where they've not done a flash forward. And I think it's better than, because they're not obligated to do it like seasons 3 and 4 with the flashbacks, where they, like, it was kind of the part of the show, like, you had to have a flashback. And so they would put in, like, the obligatory scene, but they would have nothing to do because they needed to stretch the storyline out. And so you basically would just have an episode of nothing. And so I like what they're doing with this, where they seem to recognize that, and then they just don't do anything at all. They're like, okay, we don't really have anything worthwhile, so let's just not.
Yeah. And then just have it on episodes you need to have it on, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 4, Wet Hot American Bummer. I think this is my favorite episodes of Legends yet. Summer Camp. This episode was loaded with lots of jokes, fun, and team bonding. I loved it.
It was really good. I was a little hopeful for a second with the tease about Swamp Thing. I did like the reference at least, but I was like, oh man, we could have gotten Swamp Thing in this too. How cool would that have been?
That would have been awesome. Oh, I love the team ups they did for this too. We had Sarah and Ava, and it was fun seeing them together. John Constantine and Ray, man, those two couldn't be more opposite. But it was freaking hilarious to watch them interact, the different interactions between the kids with those two.
Yeah.
Ray couldn't have been more excited to be a camp counselor, and John could have cared less.
I loved him having the pack of cigarettes rolled up in his sleeve.
I know, that was cool. We saw Mick and Charlie bond over alcohol and about being in jail. I thought that was kind of interesting too. You know, I'm looking forward to her joining the team because she's a little more like Mick, kind of more of a wild card.
I'm curious what they're gonna do with, like, obviously her reason for being on the team is her knowledge of the creatures that they're hunting, but I'm very curious how is she going to, I don't know how to say it, but like help the team. Beyond like, okay, this is the creature that you're hunting, like, because she can't shapeshift anymore, what she's going to do.
I don't know.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and assume that she's a good fighter, because anybody on the CW shows seems to just know how to fight.
So, I don't know. I think she's going to have a good friendship with Mick.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, when Nate sees her later in the season, he's gonna have some issues, I think.
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah.
But what'd you think about the child-eating vampire for the monster for this? I thought that was pretty good. And I loved how they faked us out that the old hag running the camp was the monster, and it ended up being that buff young assistant.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was... I really like them pulling these different magical creatures out. You know, this one was, I think, a little bit more obscure, and then we've gotten some other ones like the fairy godmother. It's a really good concept for this season, and they've been using it really well too.
I have to tell you, when Constantine used his magic and exposed the true look of the monster, I think that's one of the best makeup jobs we've seen on a monster yet. I really liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 5, All Dolled Up. All right, I think Ragdoll has to have been the most creepiest villain we've seen on any of the CW shows.
My girlfriend could barely look at the screen anytime Ragdoll was doing its thing. She could barely handle it.
Oh, man, it was very creepy.
It was good. I'm glad too that this villain, and I actually talked about this with my girlfriend afterwards. I was like, I don't think it's a coincidence that Cicada didn't kill this villain, because I think they knew we got something good with this. Let's save this villain for future episodes.
Yeah, this would be a good returning villain. And the thing I got a little confused about, what was this villain up to? I couldn't figure it out.
So that's I agree with you, because I thought that they never actually answered that question. There was a certain point where Iris kind of figured it out, and then they never really went on to explain it very much. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of just left it at that. I'm assuming it was something to do with he felt hurt by his mom. I'm assuming it's his mom, in his eyes, didn't appreciate him. And he was trying to replicate that hurt on other people, like the hurt that he felt he was taking out on everybody else, was what I got. But they were very, very vague on that.
It was vague. And then I didn't understand why he took Barry captive. That was the other thing that confused me.
To make Iris feel pain. Like, he destroyed the building that he destroyed. He did it because that was the architect's life's work. And so that art, like, nothing could hurt that architect as much as seeing his life's work demolished. Nothing could hurt Iris like seeing her husband murdered.
Okay. Now, so his meta ability must be to see what the most important thing it is to a person, so he knows.
I think he's just is able to figure that. I mean, like, I think all of it was pretty logical. His meta ability was clearly just being the ragdoll that he was.
Okay.
You know, being stretchy and all that. Basically, and in a lot of ways, a little bit like an evil Ralph.
Yeah, that pretty much, that's a good description.
And that's the thing. I think that's actually one of the reasons why they kept him around, because I think he's a good foil for Ralph.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see them go head-to-head.
And speaking of which, can we just talk about how hilarious it is that Ralph eats him?
That was freaking hilarious.
That whole lead-up with Ralph was fantastic. The scene where he walks in, but you've got me. And even Wells, it's like, wow, I'm inspired. that whole like last 15 minutes with Ralph was hilarious. Yeah. The Spider-Man sequence.
Yep, that was. That was great.
Eating Ragdoll, so funny.
So, since we're talking about Ralph, we see Ralph, Caitlin, Cisco, and Sherlock searching for clues of Caitlin's father. And one of the things we see is Cisco having problems with his powers after the Cicada incident.
I'm hoping that this isn't a permanent thing. I know it's definitely going to be like this for some time, which is understandable. I think they, in some ways they were trying to, they sort of semi-retired the Vibe character. And now I think they're trying to explain why he won't be using his Vibe powers as much. But I'm hoping that that's something that will eventually come back, because, like, who doesn't like Vibe? Like, let's
yeah.
Why would you want to get rid of that?
Exactly. But yeah,
I get it on the show. Don't get me wrong. Like, I understand why it's like this on the show from a plot standpoint, but like from a writing standpoint, I hope it comes back, because I don't know why, as a writer, you would want to get rid of that.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 5, The Book of Blood, Chapter 1, Requiem. The big question on my mind, is Gambi really dead?
I was asking myself that literally the entire episode. Like, when that I wasn't expecting that attack to even happen in the first place. I was like, what a bang for a episode to start. Like, man, it just really just went for it.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning.
I was not surprised that Gambi had a souped-up vehicle that could take hits like that. But, man, I was not expecting that flip over and explosion. I mean, I was like, I was thinking like when Jefferson was at first. I don't see the body. He's not dead. I was like, hey, that for once, somebody is thinking positive thoughts there.
Yeah.
But then as the episode went further and he started investigating, nobody saw him get out of the vehicle. I was like, oh, man, they can't be killing off Gambi. But then I can't put it past the show not to, because, you know, we've seen them kill off other people that you think would be sticking around. I mean, I can believe that they do it, but I still don't believe that they do it. You know what I mean?
I agree. I feel basically the same way. I want to say he's still alive just because they were so abrupt with it. But I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the point, though, isn't it? That sort of thing can just happen like that?
Yeah.
I really don't. I I like how they did it, because, like, even as an audience member, I really, like, I have no idea if he's really dead or not.
I know. I can't either. I mean, With us not being able to figure it out, they did a good job.
Yeah. And I love the emotional impact that you saw on all the characters. It was just a really well-done episode with that, where if he really did die, the characters on the show handled it realistically. And if he didn't die, A, the characters are still handling it the way you would expect them to, but they managed to keep us as an audience in the dark as well.
Yeah. And we don't really know who's behind it. Is it just the government agency behind it? Is it Tobias behind it? They didn't really explain that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Tobias, we see Tobias donated to the free clinic to have it moved. I'm wondering what he's up too with that. Obviously, he wants the land it's on for some reason.
I really like what they're doing with Tobias, where we're seeing him make obvious, clear power moves without revealing what it is exactly that he's doing.
I know, it's making him more interesting as a villain, and it's not like we have Black Lightning going up against him every week and failing, you know what I mean?
I agree, and what I really like about it too is that when you kind of keep that motive hidden, where you're seeing him do things, so like there's tangible progress with the villain, like he's obviously doing stuff that's beneficial to him, but you're keeping his true motive kind of hidden. It makes it harder for an audience member to just watch and go, oh, well, they should just do this to stop him, and that would take care of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it keeps you from thinking that because you don't know really what he's doing, so there's no obvious, other than defeat Tobias, there's no obvious, like, thing that stops him.
Yeah.
I think that was what keeps it interesting.
All right. There is something weird going on here in Freeland now. We have that boy with the bloodstains on his body that was at the clinic with his pregnant girlfriend.
Man, that creeped me out a little. Not like scary, but just like skeevy a little bit. Like the liquid pouring out of those holes. Oh
yeah,
I did not like that.
That was weird. And then we see Anissa's girlfriend, those black dots that appear on her body.
Yeah.
I was like, what the heck's going on? And then, of course, at the end of the show, we got that cop with the, like, worms crawling underneath his skin or something. That was freaking weird, too. Something weird is going on.
Yeah, something with that weird liquid metal is... What is up with it?
Yeah. But it's interesting.
I am extremely intrigued. I'm, like, a little grossed out, but very intrigued.
Yeah, I am, too. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Titans Season 1, Episode 5, Together. Man, Jason Todd showing up at the end of this episode. I was not expecting that. I mean, I knew he was supposed to show up on the show because we had talked about it for DC News. I wasn't expecting to happen then. It just seemed random for him to show up. I don't know what you thought about that.
I see. Actually, I'm glad that you mentioned that because to me it felt like, because of what we do with this podcast, we kind of have our ear to the ground in terms of like what's coming on up with these shows. And it's harder for us to get surprised by certain, like, character appearances are less likely to be a surprise for us than other people. And I felt like that was a little bit ruined for me with this, because like I knew Jason Todd was coming on. I didn't know this episode, don't get me wrong, but like I knew that he was going to pop up at some point. So I wasn't like stunned when I saw Jason Todd. Whereas I felt like if I didn't follow comic book news like I do, and I'm not complaining about that, but like if I didn't follow, I feel like that scene would have been even more shocking to me, because I'd have been like, oh crap, Jason Todd's on this show? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was a great twist. And I think for most people that twist is completely unexpected. And again, I was not expecting him to pop up in that scene, but when he popped up, I was like, oh yeah, that's right, Jason Todd's coming on the show. And I was sort of like disappointed with myself when I was like, you fool, you did this to yourself.
I'm very excited about seeing the next episode because I'm wondering how that's going to turn out.
Poorly, I think. Just based on everything else that's gone on with this show.
Do you think the secret organization is Hive?
It makes sense. That definitely makes sense. I don't know, because it does seem like the organization as a whole seems like it's dedicated to Raven's dad. We'll leave that at that. But so that's why I can't tell if that would be Hive or something else. I don't know.
I was curious what you thought, because that was the first thing. I was like, oh, I wonder if the secret organization's Hive, just because we know that's a Titans thing. But it could be something totally different altogether, too.
I think if we see Brother Blood, to me, that I think would clarify things, for me at least.
Yeah.
Don't you? Like, I feel like if Brother Blood popped up, we'd be like, oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we would know for sure. But, I mean, what's going on with this organization? We don't know. That nuclear family is just freaking weird.
I was a little bit sad that we lost them, to be honest with you. They were a good minor villains. Like, that was basically the best we were ever going to get with them, but they were enjoyable as villains, just like how kind of unsettling they were.
Yeah, they were very creepy, even in this episode. All right, we've got to bring this up. Dick and Corey's hookup was predictable.
I was kind of disappointed with it. I was like, wow. Guys, I don't know. Because I agree, just exactly because of that. Because it was so just like, I don't know exactly what you would expect.
Did you feel bad for the poor motel cougar?
I thought they didn't do enough with it there. It was just too cliche. I thought they just had the cliche of that without doing anything that benefited the story in any way.
It didn't benefit the story in any way, but besides me just finding it funny.
I feel like ultimately it just wasted like 5 minutes of screen time, basically. I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Yeah, because there was really no point to it.
It didn't do any... Like, I'm fine with you doing that storyline, but then just do something with it. Have there be more of a point than basically her just falling in love, or not love, but like lusting over a guy she has no realistic chance with, and then getting attacked in the hall. Like, that, nothing happened, really.
Yeah. It was kind of funny, but it was also pointless.
Yeah.
But it was great seeing the Titans together in this episode, and I'm looking, you know, this is just the beginning of it, and it was interesting to see everybody showing their powers and how surprised everybody was when Dick Grayson and comes back in the Robin costume.
I honestly was a little surprised that Rachel didn't know that he was Robin.
Yeah, because you think she would have figured that out.
Not necessarily that she would have figured it out, because she's been able to, obviously, intentionally and unintentionally with her powers, learn so much about him that she somehow managed to not learn such a major facet of him.
Yeah, I guess it was a little weird, but, you know, maybe she's more focused on her own problems.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, I was just surprised that she didn't know. So I know last week we talked about it's really ridiculous that Gar can't, that he has to basically go strip and then get clothes back after he transforms back again. And I do appreciate that the show highlighted that, but it also has not taken any steps towards making that less ridiculously inconvenient.
Yes. I thought it was pretty funny when he changed back. He changed back from the beast. He was just standing there naked. And they're like, go put some clothes on. So, but I'm really loving this Titan show. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
So this is going to be a weird shout-out because it's not a DC comic. But it's just what I thought of. And it's not a direct one-to-one comparison by any means. But when I read Grant Morrison's Green Lantern this week, just what I thought of personally when I was reading it was when I mentioned Mobius, but a comic that he drew, The Inkle. It's an old sci-fi story, originally French, very famous. I think a lot of people that listen to our podcast probably know of it. But it's a very like famous, influential sci-fi comic. Check it out. It's pretty out there, but then again, like Grant Morrison's Green Lantern feels like it's pretty out there too. So if that's your kind of story, if you read Green Lantern's this Green Lantern title and you're like, oh, I like stories like this, check out The Inkle.
All right, and we'll have a link to it in our show notes. All right, and for my shout out, I'm gonna shout out about the 100-page comic giant World's Greatest Superheroes Holiday Special. It is out at Walmart now. I wasn't expecting it to be out yet. I was actually surprised. It's got a brand new Flash story in it called "Twas the Riot Before Christmas." Now, I haven't read any of this yet because I just picked this up the other day. But the biggest thing was I was in Walmart, so of course I had to stop by the comics because I always check to make sure if any new ones came out. I saw it and I was like, "Oh, I got to pick this," so I picked it up. It's got a brand new Flash story in it, written by Scott Lobdell. I think that's how you pronounce his name. So it's got that in it. It's got a Superman story, a Supergirl story, Batman and Alfred story, Batwoman, Harley Quinn, and Green Lanterns, Jessica and Simon. So kind of excited to check this out. If you'd like to leave us feedback or comment on the show, you can call our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we'll be talking Superman, Supergirl, Catwoman, Flash, Wonder Woman, Plastic Man, and the final issue of Mr. Miracle. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.